You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
This is the Belief in the Magic podcast, as presented by LastWordOnSports.com, where you get the last word.
Hello, my name is Christian Holmes, and I am with...
I'm Oscar Elieff.
And we are coming at you from different parts of the GTA. This is going to be your new favorite Maple Leafs podcast. At least we hope it is. We got some stiff competition in that Steve Dangle guy and that James Myrtle.
Who are those guys?
I know. Like, they're entertaining, but, like, we're just better because we have personalities. You know what? I like those guys. I'll be straight up. If they said, hey, come on the podcast, I'd be, hell yes, I'm down.
I listen to both their podcasts on as soon as they go up.
Yep. You listen to them, let me guess.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, damn. And do you agree with what they're saying right now about the Leafs and the Bruins? I think Myrtle is going to be saying something about how he feels the Maple Leafs can make it deep into the playoffs and potentially beat the Bruins.
Oh, I don't doubt that they can beat the Bruins. I wouldn't be surprised if the Leafs made it to the third round. I wouldn't be surprised if they were eliminated first round, although that's not what we're hoping.
I agree with that, straight up.
Like, the Atlantic teams are just so lethal this year. It's too big of competition to really call what's going to happen. I definitely think the Leafs have a very good chance of beating the Bruins. I also would not be utterly shocked if they lost.
I'm with you on that. And here's the thing. For my latest piece, for Last Word on Hockey, I decided to open up an Excel spreadsheet, go on to Klorska Hockey, that website that every analytics nerd loves.
I love it too.
Hey, that's great. And as you say in your bio, you're looking to learn just as much as you can about analytics. Great place to go. And then, yeah. Anyhow. Like, oh, sorry. Did I cut you off? Oh, there's
my, No. There's my I was just agreeing.
Oh, you were agreeing. Just so the listener gets some context to what we're doing right now, he's coming through my left ear, and we're chatting over Facebook Messenger, over the calling thing, so we're just getting everything in the loop. And I'm trying not to be the asshole that I can sometimes be, but then again, I'm the smart ass, so it's just all works out in the end. Like, getting back to what I was saying, I went in and I looked at the statistics, regular season statistics, at the bottom six forwards for both the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And what I found is basically because JDR, James Van Riemsdyk, was a third liner most of the season, he's very lethal.
It's crazy that he's a third liner and he is, 36 goals this season?
Yeah, 36 goals. And Yeah, 36. I just checked that out on Hockey Reference now. Kudos to them. The way, as I was saying, JDR, since he's such a big goal scorer, he's making the Maple Leafs goals for 60 minutes go right up. He's taking them, I don't know the exact numbers, but I believe the goal score was something like 2.28 for Toronto, which is relatively high for a bottom six. And their goals against for 60 minutes is something like 2.39, which is relatively high, unfortunately. But that comes with, their smaller group.
Yeah, but and that's the great thing about Connor Brown is that he, despite being the youngest and least experienced, is the babysitter of those two, basically, of Bozak and JVR.
Yeah, basically, because he's like the best thing you can get to a two-way player when you want to keep that offensive edge. And like, if you looked at his days when he played with Connor McDavid and Travis Dermott, like he was the guy that basically bailed a lot of them out. When although really McDavid didn't really need to be bailed out because he was just he was just a weapon down there. He was like a weapon of destruction. He's like the Braun Strowman of the OHL when he was back there.
Yeah.
And the thing I realized when I compared it against Boston is they have a, I believe it's like a 1.89 goal score. So they don't get much out of their bottom six. But the thing is, their goals against for 60 minutes is actually really interesting because I think it's something like 2.21 or something, which is lower than the Maple Leafs, but it's still right up there. Like, it's only like, you know, like a point really separating them. So it's not like, you know, they're that far apart statistically. Like, Toronto's actually ahead, and as you were alluding to, like, Toronto's got a lot of depth with JVR and Tyler Bozak, not to mention Connor Brown on the third line. And then the fourth
line. Yeah, Kapanen and Komarov and sometimes Janssen.
Yep. And Janssen looks great. If you ask me, like, he's going to have his, like, you know, growing pains. But honestly, like, you got two lineups, like, if you think about it, because you can go with, like, the more, you know, defensive, not slower, but experienced lineup with Leo Komarov in it. Or you can bring in Andreas Janssen and then have that speed, some of that agility, and he's got decent hands too for a guy, fourth line player. And then to go with Kapanen and whoever you want to center that line, like that's a pretty good line.
Yeah, like the Leafs clearly out depth them at forward, but what will be key, because the Bruins have home ice advantage, will be playing the matchups against the Bergeron, Marchand, Pasternak line. And trying to get Kadri out there against him and keeping Matthews so he's able to get out against those second line, even though it does have Rick Nash, getting it against the second, third line and seeing what it can do. And if you're able to, because they're going to try and get Pasternak, that line out for about 23 minutes a night. So the ice is going to be tilted in their favor the entire time they're out there. As soon as you play the matchup game with them, especially on the road, it's going to be tough, but you can open up extra opportunities to out-depth them at second, third, and fourth line.
That's definitely a great observation because, like, the Pasternak line, I'm just going to say straight up, that scares me. That's the one thing I don't like about Boston because it's just, you know, although, like, a lot of people like to hate on, you know, Marchand because they think he's a little weasel, which he technically is. But that line is so strong, and the thing with Patrice Bergeron is not only is he a great offensive player, he can really shut down whoever he's matching up against. And, you know, it's never an easy task. And, like, do you think Babcock's going to send out Kadri's line to play against Bergeron's?
I wouldn't be surprised if he did because that was his old shutdown line and he might just go with what he knows. Despite Marner being there. And who knows, he could stir it up. And if he really wanted to, although I don't think it's the best idea, is go back to the Komarov, Kadri and Marlowe line. Although I think with how productive this line has been, I think it's a mistake to do that. But he has that option.
He definitely does. And I'm with you on that because, like, I just wouldn't want to give up the production to take, I'm not saying it's a lesser result with them. Like, I don't know. I liked Komarov, but then you see how that line goes with Marner on it, and it's like, that's tough to touch. And yeah. Like if you think about it, like, Mike Babcock's got a tough job because, like, you got your old-school hockey fans that would say, we'd rather have, you know, Komarov on that line and use it as, like, a old-school shutdown checking line. And then you got your people that are saying, well, you know, the game's evolved. Skill and agility and speed is the new king. And then with that being said, you want Marner on the line. So it's just tough to play.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I think you keep that line together because of how successful they've been. And, like, as much as I like Johnsson, I think you do keep him out because Komarov is experienced. Even and as much of the complaints as he's gotten this year, he did play a game for 24 minutes one night. He obviously has some offensive ability, and that's good to give Kapanen and Plekanec. So it's still a scoring threat, and maybe just a little bit more reliable for Babcock in his head.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And I don't know. Like, I love Komarov, and I hope he gets some playing time somehow, because I think, you know, once you get deeper into the playoffs, you know, the players like Komarov are going to start to take over those third and fourth line players when your superstars get shut down. So that's also something to factor in. Like, I noticed that last year, not just with, like, the Leafs and Capitals, but you just watched any series last year. Like look at Jake Guentzel for the Pittsburgh Penguins. When Crosby and Malkin were getting shut down, he stepped out, and he started playing well.
Yeah.
So that's something else to consider.
And the Leafs obviously lose on the defensive side of things because of guys like Charlie McAvoy, Torrey Krug, who had a fantastic season. He had 59 points in 76 games as a defenseman.
That's impressive.
And Zdeno Chara is nothing to scoff at either still, like, even at the age of 40 or 41. He logs almost 23 minutes a night and is still, like, putting up impressive defensive numbers.
For sure. And if you think about it too, that's another reason why I didn't really want to play Boston, because you can almost say without a doubt, like you said, they're beating us there. So, you know what I mean? It's not all about analytics, I guess, at the end of the day. Like, if you just look at experience, that's something you can't really analyze. It just kind of plays out itself, too.
Yeah, so, like, I'm all for analytics, but it's like, yeah, I realize that there's some things that you can't measure, and that it's not the entire game, because there are bounces that go one way. But it is something that is, I think, changing the game and something I would love to keep learning about.
Exactly. And I'm in the same boat as you, because, like, it's something where if you look at it, like, a lot of teams change how they do their power plays because they see the percentage of the shooting percentage, for example. Like, if a certain player takes a certain shot in this area, they're more likely to score than shooting at the point or something like that. That's definitely changing the game. And then, yeah, like, it helps out with your matchups and such. So it's a big thing.
Yeah, and I've gotten in Twitter arguments about it with some people who obviously one person tried to call me out for saying we'll give Matt Martin for literally any of the Carolina Hurricanes defense. Mm-hmm. And he's just said, no, we won't, moron. And it's like, why wouldn't you? The defense is crazy on Carolina. And so young, too. And just got in a whole thing with that. It's something I need to stop doing is getting in Twitter arguments, but I don't have a big enough Twitter personality to really have to be self-conscious about that.
Well, we're at the end of the day, this is why we're doing this podcast in a way, is to, you know, give ourselves a name to the face, or a voice to the face, I guess you could say. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting in an argument, like, if you know you're right. Like, in that situation, not just analytically speaking, the common sense. Like, if, you know, if anybody said, hey, we'll take Matt Martin and we'll give you one of our defensemen, especially a team like Carolina with their young, like, I'd say, hell yes, take him.
And I try and avoid starting to use analytics in an argument on Twitter, because it's like, I know I don't know a whole lot out there, but, and it's like, there are very well people that can call me out on that and just be like, nope, you're wrong. And it's like, so I'm very careful of what I use in that sense.
Because, like, it's just, I guess it's more like a human instinct to always be 100% correct. And then, like with me, I don't like using analytics myself just because I don't fully understand them. Like, you're probably, like, a lot more well-immersed in them than I am. Like, I read up on them and stuff, but I don't, you know, understand them all the time. And that can be a big, disadvantage when you're getting in an argument with somebody that could say, his expected goal score is this and this, and, you know, you're using the wrong stat, or then you get people coming in and, like, of course he's unreliable, or, you know what I mean? So it just goes straight to crap. Kind of like the NHL playoff format.
The format is rough because the three of the top teams are going to face each other in the first two rounds, theoretically, if Tampa beats New Jersey, which they should. And Toronto and Boston will eliminate each other. And it's just a rough, rough format.
And, like,
go for it.
Sorry. I didn't want to interrupt. I thought
all you.
All right. And I was going to say, from, like, the business aspect of it, too, it's awesome to have a really good first-round series because it gets people invested in the playoffs. But if you think about it, at the end of the day, like, if you have your second and third seed in the division playing each other in the first round, that means basically whoever wins that match is going to play, you know, the first seed more than likely, unless there's, like, some sort of an upset, which you never know. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but in, like, years prior, something, there might be a situation like that. But, like, when you get to the third round, like, you're not even guaranteed to see two of the top teams playing. It could be a top
Pittsburgh
team.
And Ottawa.
Yeah, that's a great example, actually. It's nice, but it's not good for business, in my opinion.
Yeah, and even outside of the East, Winnipeg and Nashville, should they win their first round series, will be playing each other in the second round. And it's like, those are the top two teams in the, I believe in the NHL, or at very least the West.
Yeah. And I don't like that. Like, I don't know if you did your bracket yet for, our league that we had going, but, I chose Nashville and Winnipeg to meet up, and, yeah, I mean, I just don't, I don't like the fact that it's in the second round. I think it should be in the third round because, as you said, they're basically both of the best teams in the West, if not in the NHL. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like they finished 1-2 in NHL standings this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
And there's so many formats that can replace this. A good one's the 1-8. Seeding is like 1-8, etc. The very basic one. But the one I really like is the where you choose your opponent. Because I don't know why the NHL doesn't do that, because they love money. It creates a rivalry between, it's like, oh, you think you can beat us by picking us? And they can also just televise it and make boatloads of cash just by doing nothing.
Essentially. And I actually really like that idea, if you think about it, because not just from the money aspect, but from the fan aspect, like, you know, you could, you know, teams could say, like, send us a hashtag of who you want us to play in the first round, who you want us to pick, right? So then you get the fan engagement, which means, you know, even if they're not buying money to, or paying money to go there and watch it live, or watching it on TV, they're hyping it up on social media, which is, like, creates an emotion.
Yeah. And what leagues do it right now? I think it's the Austrian League that do it, and the Southern Professional Hockey League that does it. And it's just a great idea. I would really like to see it eventually implemented into the NHL. I don't see too many complications coming into it, but that said, I am not working for the league, so that's not for me to make the call on.
That's true, but you never know. Like, you could be working through the league in the 5-6 years' time.
One can only hope.
Yeah, hey, you just gotta follow your dreams. You gotta keep going and, you know, work your ass off. You never know where you'll get.
Yeah, for sure.
But here's my question to you. What do you say to an idealistic or an old-timer that, prefers the 1-8 bracket, like, you know, best team plays worst team in the first round? How would you try to sell them on, you know, the best team gets to pick who they want to play in the first round? How would you sell that to them?
Well, so in this case, it would be someone who's resistant to the idea.
Yeah, somebody that is resistant to the idea.
Well, just the fact that if it's more incentive to do well as your team, because when Toronto hit third and it looked like they were going to just maintain third, it's like, what's actually stopping them from saying, hey, I actually want to fall behind Florida and take that wild card spot, and then they can just have the third spot, so I actually get... Say if they got the first wildcard spot, I actually get Washington instead of Tampa or Boston. It's incentive to work harder to maintain or do better. That obviously wouldn't have eliminated the last few games for the Leafs, where it's like you're guaranteed third no matter what. So, but that's just the way those games were, and those, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, I think that you made a really good point. If there's incentive to play, that makes the last few games of the season a lot more interesting, right? And, like, let's say in a market like, I don't know, a Carolina or a Florida-type market where, you know, you're lucky to get three-quarters of an arena full during the playoffs, you could, you know, maybe get, like, half the arena full when you're trying to work to get into the playoffs, right? So that's good from the marketing standpoint, as was mentioned before. So it's actually pretty cool. Like, is there another format besides the 1-8 format, and then the top team chooses who they want to play. Is there another format you would like to see, like maybe like a wild card game, like one game, like a play-in game type thing?
Like in baseball?
Yeah, like in baseball.
I feel like that could be interesting. And the only one on top of that, I'm not too familiar what the playoffs is like in other sports, but is just like in the division, it's like one through four makes it, no wild card or something like that. I'm less lenient to go towards that though, for the same problems as previously mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Because like of the like, issues that
it's like if you do that, might as well just go through for the 1-3-8 unless you really want them to play in the division for the first round. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just sort of goes hand in hand with that 1-8 format.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. I kind of wish the NHL would just go back to the, like, the 1-8 format, or just, you know, do that, and then maybe think about, you know, once they get tired of it, like the format you were mentioning, top team picks who they want to play, and then you got that whole market of, you know, people that, you know, are just going to get into it, right? Because it's like, it's all like, it's almost like a fantasy draft, because yeah, like they're saying, this is my dream first round match, and then there you go, they pick the opponent, there you go, you got it.
And it's also kind of a mental game in it. It's just like, what if the top team doesn't actually pick the easiest person? It's just like, what if Washington ended up number 3, which I think they are, and Pittsburgh was number 5? And it's just like, yeah, we want you. It's like, why do you want us? It's just playing some mind games. It's like, you think you're that much better than us that you want to play us?
Mm-hmm. Like, you create like a soap opera, kind of like a WWE yeah type feud.
There's also problems that I can see with that, though. It's just like, what if you lose that matchup?
Yeah. Make your management look bad, I guess.
Yeah, and that's another. It's like, who would pick who they play? Like, would it be the general manager? Would it be the coach? What if it you just left it to the players or something?
Yeah, like, That would be an interesting question. I think that would be a whole part of the showcase, though, because, like, oh, who's going to make the choice? Like personally, if it were me, I'd want, like, you know, the coach or the players or even the general manager if they're involved in, like, you know, with the coach, because some general managers just stay up in the press box and, you know, they're totally separate from the coach. They don't talk to the team. Uh-huh. Kind of like a Billy Dean type guy. He used to be like a general manager in baseball for the longest time. He just kept to himself, let his manager do his thing, and he just did his thing up in the press box. He wasn't involved with the team.
I think it would be hilarious with the players picking, but I don't think that's the way to go at all. It's just funny to think about, but. I think a guy like Kyle Dubas, I wouldn't mm-hmm. mind him picking, obviously being in talks with Mike Babcock, but it's just like, yeah, let's have Dubas pick, because he's the whole sort of analytics guy, as he's sold, and obviously talk to the coach, because you want to get his input, you want to see who he wants to play, and all that.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's an interesting thing to consider, and maybe we would ask the podcast viewers or listeners, however you're doing this, maybe to leave a comment in the comment section and give us your take, or you can hit us up at on our Twitters. Our Twitters will be in the bio. Mine is at Holmesy Wright, and Oscar's is.
Mine is at Oscar Ellie_99.
Alrighty, so don't be afraid to hit us up. And do you ever wanna a topic from us to talk about during the podcast once we get some listeners listening to our stuff, just hit us up. Right now, this is our first time doing this. So we're like podcast virgins, I guess you could call us. So we're just getting our feet wet. Oscar, you wanted to talk about basically the Maple Leafs free agents situation coming up in 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, 2018, you got the usual ones that everyone's been talking about. JVR, Bozak, Komarov. Then you also have Don Moore and Thomas Plekanec. And Roman Polak on defense. And I believe Connor Carrick is an RFA.
I believe you're right. Maybe I should go on Cap Friendly right now. Check that out.
But, so, like, obviously, I see majority of those guys, all the UFAs walk in, unless Babcock really wants to bring back Polak for another year. But, honestly, I think Kyle Dubas will be the GM at that point. And
I'm with you on that.
And I don't think that'll be a problem for a guy like Mark Hunter, who, if he was made GM, I feel like he'd be in sort of a Jim Benning type role. It's like, oh, you're an amazing scout. Oh, no, dude, that's an awful trade. Why would he do that? That's not saying, like, he would make awful trades, but let him be a scout. He knows the Canadian Hockey League like the back of his hand. Is just great with that. Like, don't mess with that. I don't think he would want to be changed his role, but anyways, I don't see any of the 2018 UFAs coming back. 2019 gets a little bit interesting because that's with and William Nylander is an RFA and for 2018. He's gonna get paid.
He will, trust me.
Now, 2019 RFAs, you got the big ones like Matthews and Marner, and Kapanen, and et cetera, et cetera. But for UFAs, don't believe they have much outside of Jake Gardner. And that's a weird one for me.
Yeah,
definitely. I'm a huge Gardner fan, although he does drive me a little crazy like everyone else. Jake Gardner and Ron Hainsey. Hainsey won't be back after that, but Jake is a weird one because the Leafs defense are heavily criticized for not playing defense, and I think Jake is a fantastic player. I don't think he improves the not playing defense as much, so I'd like to see them get something for him. I don't think they would get much just because he'd be a rental. He's still on a pretty good deal. He's just over $4 million, but he's left-handed, so that's something GMs look for is right-handed defensemen. And it's only if the team is really lackluster on defense or if they need an extra offensive push. Like the Edmonton Oilers were saying how they need some more point production from their defense. Or a team like the New Jersey Devils who don't have much going for them on defense other than Will Butcher and Sammy Vatanen.
Yeah, definitely Vatanen.
And even then, I don't think those two, at very least right now, for Butcher, are number one guys.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like, not to be, like, you know, I like Butcher. I think he's going to be a good defenseman. Maybe a top four. But he's definitely going to be a good defenseman. Sammy Vatanen, he's good too, so.
He'd be good, you know, like, 3-4 role, I think. I haven't actually looked at any of the numbers recently, but I believe they are playing him in a higher role right now.
Something like that. Yeah, just to give him, get his feet wet. Not feet wet, because he's already had his feet wet, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Giving him some time to grow.
Yeah, I guess you could say. He is top line with Andy Green right now. And then Will Butcher is actually third line with Ben Lovejoy. Then middle two are John Moore and Mikko Mueller. I don't even know him.
Neat, something like that. I'm bad at like pronouncing names like those. It's not that I don't like these players. It's just like I'm like that type of guy where, like, you know, I know this is off topic, but you know, like when you get to like a guy like Nirko. And then it's like you can hit the newer part because I think we get tired of hearing Robert Mueller, and then you say Mueller, you say Mueller, you just say it like you're French, and then it like makes sense.
Yeah, and they definitely are lacking on defense, and their young guys have been doing all right, and as you know, like Taylor Hall has been just lighting it up and is leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else on the team in points. Like, the next closest one is Nico Hischier with 51 points. Mm-hmm. And those are the only two players with plus 50 points.
So, yeah, and I honestly think if the Devils actually made it by Tampa Bay, that's not happening, by the way. If they did, it would be Taylor Hall's help. Taylor Hall doing all the heavy lifting.
Yeah. And
but like I,
like Keith Kincaid dragging them past. Because I haven't actually looked at too many of the numbers, but I think Kincaid's been doing very well this season.
Mm-hmm.
And that Grabner trade has been rough for them so far.
Yeah, definitely.
He has 2 goals, 3 assists in 21 games so far for them.
Ouch.
And prior to that, he only had 6 assists going into the trade this season.
Mm.
So it's like it's not like he's has setting people up to fall back on.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough in that regard. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, but yeah, sorry to circle back after I dragged us to the New Jersey Devils defense. I can see it going either way on Jake Gardiner. Oh, and Curtis McElhinney will be UFA the same season. Depends how he's still doing. I see Sparks filling in that role at least by, if not next year, like I think they'll ride the hot hand with McElhinney for the first part of next year. But I wouldn't be surprised if like Sparks or even Picard gets called up because
me neither.
Calvin Picard, even though Sparks is better in the AHL, he's able to play a big volume of games in the NHL, even though he didn't have a great save percentage on Colorado last year. They were like a record worst. So you can't pin all that on him. He still was able to put up a 50 game season, 904 save percentage, which isn't great.
That isn't great, but isn't bad for a team like Colorado.
Yeah. And like I would have expected it to be somewhere in where Scott Darling is this year for the Hurricanes on that team.
Not the greatest looking save percentage there.
No, I think he'll bounce back next year. He isn't this bad.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just, you know, I think it's just an adjustment too. I think he's a guy that, like, I think he could get like a 915, 920 save percentage. I think that might be overvaluing him, but.
Well,
he is a good goalie.
He was able to get it in Chicago in the backup role. And that's kind of what he's been demoted to so far this season in the later half. I think he just needs to work through some stuff this summer. And we'll see where he goes from that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so the Leafs, they also have next year coming off the books is buyouts from Jared Cowan and Tim Gleason.
Ooh.
And Martin Marincin is also an RFA, so that's another $225,000 that they have coming off the books out of buried contracts.
Mm-hmm. So, like, the question is, like, the thing is, like, I notice how we're not talking about, oh, we can sign this or this guy, like, a free agent, like, that's going to be, you know, coming from a different team because, like, we're still worried about, like, Marner, Matthews, Nylander.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of predict UFA sign-ins when we haven't gotten all those guys locked up, which they obviously have to sign Nylander this season.
Yeah.
My guess is they'll lock up Matthews and let Marner play out his the last year and see where it is from there and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's the best move there.
Because he's not going to get Matthews money, but he might be asking for like $8 million. And it's just like, we want one more year for you to prove it, and then we'll come back to it. So it's like, either you give him what he wants, or you're able to come to the table and say, you didn't do that well this year. We're not giving you that huge 8-year, $8 million contract quite yet.
Kind of like the Kadri situation where he had to get a couple bridge contracts before he got his big payday.
Like he got, which is still on a fantastic contract. But yeah, he was just coming off a 1-year deal after the last place finish, I believe. And he got extended with, along with Morgan Rielly for, till 2022.
Which that isn't bad because, like, if you think about it, he's getting a good, like you said, it's a fantastic contract for both sides. And you know, like, I think that's the type of deal that Toronto's going to have to look to make with one of their big three. And I think it's probably going to end up being a guy like Marner. Maybe it could be Nylander, though.
I see all the guys making minimum Pasternak money, which is 6 years, $6.5 million. And a lot of the comparables for them are quite interesting. It's just like Nikolai Ehlers is making $6 million over the next 7 years, I believe. Pasternak, 6 years, 6.5. And they're going to have to look a lot at that kind of stuff. And Nathan MacKinnon is just over six for an extended period of time, so...
Yeah, so that is, you know, it's pricey, but it's not insanely pricey. But it's just like, I guess that's what you get when you have like, it's a good problem to have in a way, because like a lot of teams are like, oh, we wish we could have guys where we would have to make these decisions. Like a lot of teams aren't in the position Toronto's in, so I guess it's not a bad problem.
Yeah, like, here's some comparables for what they could get is Philip Forsberg signed till 2022, 6 years, $6 million. Pasternak, 6 years, 6.6. Nathan MacKinnon, 7 years, 6.3. Bo Horvat is sort of one that's probably under their level of play, but still a good comparable, is 6 years, 5.5. They'll be making 6.5 to 7 million is my guess. For both Nylander and Marner, like the average of the two will probably come to about 7.5, my guess is. I see one or them getting like the same amount.
I think your guess is right on the money because I hope it's great on the money because watch Marner go and have like a great season next year and he's like, oh yeah, I want an $8.5 million contract.
Yeah, Draisaitl money.
Yeah, exactly. That's what the one thing that scares me.
They won't sign. I'm guessing they'll sign Matthews to Eichel money, which is $10 million mm-hmm. over 8 years. I'm not upset with that. Like, I think that's a fair deal. Everyone that's saying like 11 and 11.5, it's just like he can't go in and be like, I want McDavid money, but not have McDavid's numbers.
Yeah, exactly. Especially in the salary cap there, where like teams are have to be careful how they spend their money. Like, not everybody's like the New York Yankees, where they can go and throw $20 million at a player per year that they like, right? So it's that dynamic too, and that, and like as a guy that, you know, looking forward, you want to build a good team. Like, you can't, you know, be giving out ridiculous money. And that's kind of why, like, I love Patrick Marleau, but when they gave him that 3-year deal and he's getting like roughly $6.5 million a year, I was like, I don't know about that one, because that's a lot of money to give out to an aging guy, although he was really good this season. He did a lot better than I thought he would.
Yeah. And I was scared when they were just like, they're in talks with Patrick Marleau. I'm like, no, stay away, stay away. But I'm not too unhappy with it. And even in his third year, I believe that is the CBA opt-out year. So it could potentially be a lockout, I think. But the lockout year is still 2020-2021 season.
Yeah. And I pray to God there's not a lockout that lots their D1, because I remember, I was a young fellow that didn't really pay much attention to the business side of things back then. But I don't really think the owners and players saw eye to eye on that one.
Yeah, like, if anything, it will be, my guess is, just a partial lockout. Just to get things worked out, because the players will come to them and be like, we want to go to the Olympics. Will be a big one. Then the NHL will probably be trying to get rid of the bonus heavy contract.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, it's all you. I'm just going to bring something back, so I'll do it after.
All right, we'll do it after. That's what my girlfriend always used to say. See, it's in the description. We're uncensored and 100% no bullshit. let's hope that makes it in the print. But our buddy Deeker, if he listens to the podcast this long, I know he's probably just going to be like, hey, you can't swear. I'm going to be like, oh, well, make like a tree and fuck off. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean that in a bad way. But now that you said you want to, you know, get your ideas together, while you're getting your ideas together, I had an interesting question asked to me today. When I was going to class, and I go to school in Hunter College, we're in Etobicoke, so it's New Toronto, just to give the listener a perspective of where I am. So if I were to bus downtown, it would probably be like on a good day, like 45 minutes to an hour, hopefully no longer. But Maple Leaf Square, as you know, any Leaf fan knows, it's known for its big playoff parties. And usually you can get in there for free, which that's usually the gig. But once you get inside there, you need to pay for alcohol or pay for food or whatnot. So I got asked, how would you go about getting alcohol in there, specifically tall cans? And what I thought for a second is, okay, if you go there and you buy the tall cans, you're paying, like, with, like, tax and everything, probably $10 a can. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. That's what Toronto's like. Even if you go to a Marley's game, it's expensive. So what I was saying, and this is like your podcast version of the Handyman's Corner, is, like, You know, you buy a six-pack of Molson Canadian or whatever you're into, Miller Lite, Coors Light, and then you put it on your leg, and then you put three beers on your leg, and then you take the handyman's secret weapon, which is duct tape, and you just, you don't, like tape it so much that it makes your leg, like, cuts off circulation, but you tape it tight enough where, like, if you're wearing jeans, which right now at this time of year you're probably going to be wearing, it sticks to your leg. And if you go past the metal detectors, what you do is you say, like, oh, I hurt my ankle and I have, like, a metal plate in my ankle. Yeah. And then they can't debate you on that, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, for a bigger guy like myself, I have... I'm a little bit chunkier, right? So a guy's not gonna say, oh, well, you look a little extra chunky today. Is there alcohol there? Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So
what I told the guy, I told him to do that. And then he's like, oh, okay, I'm gonna try this. So I think I've inspired a new trend among my friends through the cheap college kids that don't wanna pay further alcohol. Like, you know, like, if you're going to, like, a bar, like, around here, like, the tents and the brews and all that stuff aren't actually that expensive, but as soon as you get down into the entertainment district, if you plan on drinking, you're just better off drinking before you leave.
Yeah, here in Stratford, it's not too bad for the bars when you go out, But, yeah, I remember when I was going to Toronto to visit my friend who's at U of T right now. I just went on. We just, because he had classes all day, and me and my other friend went up to visit him for his 19th birthday. So we were just, like, we were hopping around from place to place, having a different beer there, here and there. And then we stop, we go on a steam whistle tour, we grab a pint there. And then we didn't realize we get a bottle of free beer on the tour. And so it's just like we show up and it's just like we're drunk before him on his 19th birthday.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, when you were saying, like, before I turned 19, I drank hard liquor more than I drank beer. So I would just bring a flask somewhere and then just order a Coke or something and then just spike it like that. So that was a lot easier.
It was. And it's cheaper, too.
Yeah.
Like, you can just go, like, you can go to Taco Bell or something, like, although there aren't that many around here, and just, like, go to the fountain drinks, and then you just get, like, a refillable pop, right?
Yeah.
And then you just take, like, every time you want to pour some more in, you just take a funnel, and you put it in, and, you know, it works out perfectly.
But now to bring it back to hockey, what I wanted to say earlier is we were talking about the forwards and defense for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins in round one.
Okay.
And those are pretty obviously favored in one direction. But the one thing that's sort of even is the goaltending. It's like Tuukka Rask versus Frederik Andersen. As a Leafs fan, I'm going Andersen on this, but I wouldn't put up too much of a fight with you if you said Tuukka Rask.
Yeah. Although I wouldn't say Tuukka Rask.
Yeah. What was his numbers this year?
I think it was like, didn't he have something like...
He had a crazy streak with them. It was like 22 games without a loss in regulation. Okay, yeah. Okay. So he finished with 34 wins, 2.36 goals against average, and a .917 save percentage. So yeah, I'd go with Freddie there, I think. They both had very hot runs and obviously had cold runs as well.
Yeah.
Like Freddie with the being cold in October, and then here sort of at the end of the season, he fell off a little bit.
Definitely.
Very similar numbers. And Freddie is 2.81 goals against average, even though it's not a great stat. 38 wins and .918 save percentage. So very, very similar.
Very similar.
So like I said, you can talk me into either side. With Freddie playing significantly, like 12 games more than Tuca, but like I said, that's not a huge factor to me in this series. Because they're both pretty even, as opposed to, like, say, the Winnipeg versus Minnesota series, who has Connor Hellebuck, who might finish in top three of Vezina voting, and
definitely
Devin Dubnyk, who has had still a 918 year, but an off year from what we've seen of him in Minnesota.
Yeah, and, you know, definitely. So you brought up some good points there, actually. So, you know what I mean, though? My biggest thing is, like, in the debate between Tuukka Rask and Frederik Andersen, okay, you could say to me, oh, Rask has really good numbers, which he does, but I bet you if you went into the advanced analytics, he had a lot of help from his defense, and I think those analytics and those stats would show that, where Frederik Andersen, when he was hot by himself more so. Like, his defense left him out to dry a lot throughout the year. And he had to, like, if you look at it, he's faced the most shots out of any NHL goaltender. So he's got a tough job, like, trying to keep the puck to the net. Where Rask, he's got a lot of help. With, like, mind you, it's not like he's getting a substantially better amount of help from his defense, but his defense isn't always leading him out to dry, where, like,
yeah.
Toronto, where I just find, and I think the analytics would support it too if I went and looked at them, like, in depth.
I don't even know what to look for in goalie analytics.
Me neither.
Like, I have a vague idea for players, but goalie is I don't even know.
All I know is, like, Scott Wheeler, he's a lead writer for The Athletic,
for
and
sure.
He covers the Marlies. He's the one that I get, like, those types of analytics from, because, like, it makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
But, like, we talk about being a journalism in our data journalism class is making data and advanced statistics understandable. But, like, I gotta hand it to Scott. Like, he makes it a lot more easier to comprehend for, like, just a casual fan than anybody else, really. Because, like, a lot of people, I find a lot of sports writers just throw stats at you left and right.
Yeah.
And, like, you're supposed to understand them. And then, like, he slows it down a bit, makes it easier to understand. Because, like, you know, like, for a guy like you that wants to get involved in hockey big time, like, I think, you know, that those would be interesting stats to explore, analytics, stats, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, and I know the program at Brock that I'm going to for sport management, which I start next year for the listeners, if you're wondering. They have in fourth year, you're able to go into an analytics focus, and then you're able to take a course, which is the sport industry and hockey. And so I'm definitely excited for that, but that's still 4 years away.
Hey, but it's still something to look forward to.
Yeah, for sure.
Like for the first few years of your course, you're just going to learn, like, you know, like, the business aspect of sport management.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like an MD or an MBA type thing.
Yeah,
For that.
The actual bachelor, it's like a bachelor of sport management is what I'm going through for.
Okay. And is it 4 years then?
Four years.
Okay. And then, like, in your fourth year, you can specialize, kind of like what I'm doing.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It's the same program that Kyle Dubas did.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's their big name there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, You know what? Like, I'm going to be straight up honest. I almost went to the Rocker Sport Management. It's just, like, my parents are like, eh. We don't really think what you're going to get out of it is what you are expecting.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't want to, like, you know what I mean?
Like, I phoned a guy that went through the program, and he works for the London Knights currently, and he was actually very helpful. It's just like, people are like, what, do you want to be a coach or something? And it's like, no, that's not what it is. It's like, think of it as a business course, but instead of studying the marketing plan of Coca-Cola, you study the Toronto Maple Leafs. And in fourth year, you can take like analytics course or something like that. And yeah, he was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And he sounds like a very helpful gentleman, because that's what I tried to explain to my parents, but they didn't really see it.
Yeah.
So here I am now. I'm not complaining that I'm in a journalism course, although our industry sucked. But you know, I guess it's just where life takes you. So, and like I think you'll do very well in those studies, because you're gonna set yourself up no matter what. Like, even if you become an accountant after university, you don't have to work for a sports team.
Yeah.
You're looking at an easy 80 grand a year.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just like, even if I work in marketing or something for a sports team, I'll call that a win.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're doing what you love, you'll be around sports, and you know, and it's something that, you know, you can go to work and it's not actually work. You're just more so going there and just enjoying it, where, like, you know, a lot of our parents, I don't know what your situation's like back at home, go work at, like, you know, a 9-to-5 type job that they just wish they didn't have to work at. Like,
yeah, mom's secretary at my high school, and dad's teacher at the other high school, but he teaches foods, and he used to be a chef at one of the in my opinion the best restaurants in our town, Stratford, partly because I used to work there too. But
okay,
yeah, I don't think he was unhappy with that at all, and I think he really enjoys the teaching part of it too.
I wouldn't be unhappy with that. Get to share your skills and, you know, help build new shouts. Why did I say shouts? That doesn't make sense. But yeah, that's definitely an awesome skill to have, and I'm sure you've had many good meals to verify that.
Oh yeah.
So
university food's gonna be rough, I think.
It might be, but you know what? Like, I heard Brock has, like, one of those buffets where you go in, pay $6, and then you can, like, eat all you can eat. And it's decent stuff.
Yeah, but, like, for sure.
It won't be, like, home-cooked meals, but that, I think that's what makes the holidays all that more worthwhile, so.
Yeah. All right, I think we're approaching an hour here.
I think we are.
So we should call it at that, but just to sort of bring them back to the main big two points that we, or big three points, it's just like, don't count the Leafs out of the playoffs. They are lethal on the offense. The playoff format, there's many, many better options for what the league currently has, where you're still seeing good matchups and good rivalries, but you're also seeing some of the best teams face off later. And the Leafs UFAs, I had to see one of them coming back, but if any of them, I'd see Gardner.
Yeah, I think it's the cheapest guy to bring back.
And like, he's a 50-point defenseman. It's hard to let that go.
Yeah, it definitely is. I wouldn't let him go, but, you know, I wouldn't want to be the general manager. A lot of tough decisions.
Yeah.
Let's just say, dude, this gets made the GM. Just a quick little question. And do you think to, like, make a name for himself, he goes out and signs Jonathan Tavares, and then, like, they try to keep the team together for, like, one more year before, like, all the stuff gets really fucky with contracts and just go out, all out for the Stanley Cup.
No, I don't think he's going to try and make a big splash to bank a name. I think he is a smart guy that will do what's best and what's needed. I don't think it's going to be him going out there and making a splash or making a name. I think he's going to do what is best.
And I hope you're right. Mind you, I wouldn't mind having a Jonathan Tavares type player on our team.
Best 1-2-3 punch in the league other than maybe Crosby, Malkin, and Broussard.
Yeah, definitely. And watch them just go out and do it. I could just see it happening. I'd rather him be in Toronto than Montreal, straight up. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, I think that we'll call that a podcast.
Thank you very much, everybody. We definitely enjoyed ourselves. I'm not going to really enjoy writing the article up after I just spent, like, you know, 10 hours looking at a computer screen to do projects and shit. But, yeah, we'll get this out. And we hope that you'll listen to us on your ride home or whatever you're doing. And, you know, if you have any suggestions for us, anything you want us to talk about, we're going to try to make this a weekly thing once we get our feet wet. And, yeah, hopefully we have something to talk about next week, something that's positive.
All right. Thank you very much for listening.
You're tuned in to Last Word Radio. Last Word on sports.com. And that is the last word.